Billy Mills said, "There's no doubt in my mind that he was shot because of the positions he has taken."
Peace. Some say that it is useless to speak of peace. Peace. Too many think it is unreal.
Peace.
Too many of us think it is impossible.
Peace.
Peace.
Peace and freedom.
Peace and freedom.
Freedom and peace. Peace and freedom.
Not peace at the expense of freedom, but both peace and freedom.
Genuine peace. Genuine peace, in a just and genuine peace, means of assuring peace, world peace. World peace like community peace, the world of peace, pursuing the paths of peace, the strategy of peace. For peace is a process. There is no single simple key to this peace. Universal peace and goodwill. Peace need not be impractical. And war need not be inevitable. We must therefore persevere in the search for peace. First, examine our attitude towards peace itself. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears, but we have no more urgent task. I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. Wealthiest nation in a continent which is not wealthy failed to carry out its full responsibilities to its sister republics. We have now accepted that responsibility. In the same way, those who possess wealth and power in poor nations must accept their own responsibilities. They must lead the fight for those basic reforms which alone can preserve the fabric of their societies. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. Here at home, the future is equally revolutionary. The New Deal and the Fair Deal were bold measures for their generation. But now this is a new generation.
This administration has failed to recognize, that in these changing times, with a revolution of rising expectations sweeping the globe, the United States has lost its image as a new, strong, vital, revolutionary society.
The long view shows us that the revolution of national independence is a fundamental fact of our era. This revolution will not be stopped.
I believe in an America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace or the public acts of its officials, where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference.
We need a permanent unemployment insurance program so that there are those who want to work, and can't find a job will not be shifted and living on a marginal income without hope for themselves. These are things which other countries in Western Europe did 30 or 40 years ago. Great Britain, and we regard ourselves as a progressive society, had these provisions at the time of the First World War.
And yet this is suggested as a most radical proposal. We have to, in the next 8 years, build as many school buildings as we've built in our entire history. And yet, we have found it extremely difficult to secure support for this vital program. We cannot leave the 17 million people who have retired and who may become ill. If they have no money, under the legislation now in the books, they have a chance to receive some as indigents. But that is not the way we believe it should be done. And if their son happens to have some money in the bank, they do not qualify. And he goes and pays out, and it may break him at a time when he has responsibilities to his children. Why it is so difficult to secure passage of a minimum wage, paying somebody in interstate commerce a dollar or a dollar 10 or 15 cents, I do not understand. But it is regarded in some circles as highly radical and highly inflationary. For the first time, unemployed men can retire at 62. For the first time. And I do not regard this as a particularly radical proposal. Dependent children can receive aid for the first time in our history without the wage earner deserting his family. In the old days, before this act was passed, if a child was undernourished, it was necessary for the wage earner to desert his wife and family in order that those children should qualify for assistance. But last year, that was changed.
The president's willingness to abandon tradition was responsible, in part, for his failure to succeed with the business community, in spite of efforts at conciliation.
I don't remember the figures exactly, but the president was not extremely popular in Texas, nor was he in the country.
I am delighted to have a chance to say a few words about this administration's policy, which has been the subject of a good deal of discussion, acrimony, and controversy on wages and prices and profits. Now, I know there are some people who say that this isn't any business of the President of the United States, and who believe that the President of the United States should be the honorary chairman of a great fraternal organization and confine himself to ceremonial functions. But that isn't what the Constitution says. And I did not run for President of the United States to fulfill that office in that way. Harry Truman once said there are 14 or 15 million Americans who have the resources to have representatives in Washington to protect their interests, and that the interests of the great mass of the other people, 150 or 60 million, is the responsibility of the President of the United States, and I propose to fulfill it. Then I believe it is the business of the President of the United States to concern himself with the general welfare and the public interest. And if the people feel that it is not, then they should secure the services of a new President of the United States.